In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'm joined today by English singer-songwriter Courtney Hadwin, who first came to prominence in the U.S. back in 2018 with an appearance on America's Got Talent. She was 13 at the time. Her debut album is Little Miss Jagged, and it features our recent coolest song in the world, All the Love Money Can Buy. Let's give that a listen, and afterwards I'll be back with Courtney for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Conversations time, and I am the Mighty Manfred, and I'm speaking with dynamic singer-songwriter Courtney Hadwin. First came to prominence in this country back around 2018, 2019 with her appearance on America's Got Talent. By 2023, she was working with producer Kevin Bowe. They've issued several singles, and now the debut album, Little Miss Jagged, is out, and it features our coolest song in the world this week, All the Love Money Can Buy. How are you, Courtney?
I'm good. How's you?
Fine, thank you. Very excited to be talking with you now that there's like an album out. Congratulations on the new album.
It's honestly crazy.
Crazy? What's crazy about it?
Oh, I don't know. I just feel like I've been working on this album like for as long as I can remember. And it doesn't actually feel real that it's actually out now. Like, it's quite overwhelming.
Well, you know, the expression is that you have your whole life to come up with your first album, right? So how old are you now? 21 maybe? 20?
Yeah, 21.
21. All right. So you've got, and this what's unique about, I guess, your life experience generating this, because you have that America's Got Talent kind of experience. You worked with a Simon Cowell guy. I mean, did any of that sort of experience, how did that experience kind of like influence the album, either creatively or logistically?
I wouldn't really say it influenced the album. The whole Simon Cowell, AGT kind of thing. I would say it was all just a time of my life which kind of molded me to who I am now. I feel like I experienced a lot of stuff to be able to have the album that we have now.
So like experiences in the studio or experiences with dealing with the music industry?
Yeah, a lot of experiences with being in the music industry, being so young in the music industry. And then also like, I feel like at 13 years old, I was kind of just put onto a platform where big songwriters and producers were just like, okay, write a song. And I was kind of like, well, what do you want me to write about? I'm 13 years old. I have not experienced life at all. The most you're going to get is how much I miss my dog back home. So yeah, I kind of had to experience life a little bit before I could physically write and create music and find out who I was. And that really helped with that.
So I want to visualize that you as a young girl, well, you know, as a teenager, an emerging teenager, 13-year-old, and having adults sit there. I mean, are you physically in a room with them looking at you like, okay, kid, what you got?
It was awful. I mean, I loved every second of it. It's shaped me to who I am now. But I don't know. I feel like a lot was expected from me at such a young age. And it was a lot of pressure, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, it was also just a matter of I knew who I wanted to be. I knew what I wanted, why I wanted to do music. And it kind of got put into, okay, this is your job now at 13 years old, and the fun kind of got took out of it. I was writing music which was pure pop music, which anyone that knows me knows that I'm not a pop princess. I love like soul, blues, rock and roll, and I've always loved like the uniqueness in music, not just the fake kind of poppy pink stuff. And as soon as I came off that show, it was basically like, okay, we want to create a pop star, which just wasn't for me.
No, you're Little Miss Jagged.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the last few years, several years, you've been working with producer Kevin Bowe, American songwriter, record producer. He's based in Minneapolis. He's worked with Paul Westerberg, The Replacements, and his songs have been done by the likes of Etta James and Joe Cocker, Leonard Skinner, Robin Ford, John Mayall. How did you first come in contact with Kevin?
It was kind of just like from friends of friends. Like, it was during like lockdown time, and I was writing with a load of songwriters and producers, and I got introduced to him. We hopped on a call, we wrote a song which was absolutely terrible, and we swore down that no one will ever hear that song. It was so bad. It's like a little inside joke of ours, but yeah, it was just like an instant connection, and it's just been an ongoing of years of trusting each other and being able to open up to each other. And I see him as a friend as well as a work colleague. So yeah, it's amazing how much our friendship has grown and impacted on the music.
Well, I love the idea that there's this, you guys wrote this song and you think it's really terrible. So I want to talk more about that for a second. So I guess working on the song together, you know, you wanted to sort of figure out if this, you could have a working relationship. And so the exercise was to try and write a song together, which you completed, and then you both admit it's pretty horrible.
Yeah, we wrote a song, and it was kind of just at the stage of just messing around, and then we just carried on writing. And then a couple of months later, we kind of found like the niche in music, like, oh, this is the kind of music I want to be writing. And then we'd look back on the songs and we're like, oh god, we wrote that, that's terrible. But we did that a couple of times. We look back on songs and we're like, that was a really crappy day, what were we thinking writing that? But it happens. Like, we write really ridiculously bad songs, but we do that to get the good stuff,
right? So thinking about that, has your relationship changed over the course? So, like, oh, I was going to say, has your relationship changed over the course of your working together? So how long have you guys actually been working together? Has it been as much as 5 years?
Since I was 15.
Okay, so right. So five, six, almost about nearly six, close to half a dozen years. Has that, and you've gotten older through that period of time. So has the dynamic in the songwriting relationship changed at all?
Definitely. I feel like, well, first of all, for the first 2 years, he says he didn't understand a word I was saying because I just agreed with everything. But yeah, it's definitely has changed. I've got older. It's like I said, it's a trust process as well. It's like, I'm not very good at opening up to people. And that's one of the reasons I love songwriting, because it's a better way for me to express myself. And yeah, it's just been a trust process of being able to tell him things that I would with friends back home or with, like I would with family. And it's definitely came through in music, having someone to be able to say, like, this has happened to me today, this has happened to me today, and to have that person to write with, it really, really helps.
You know, so I seem to remember speaking with you before and talking about Kevin, and that your initial sessions, were those through Zoom?
Yeah. Obviously, when we first met, it was in lockdown, and we wrote for a couple of years, not really creating an album, really, just writing music for the sake of writing music. And then I just came out of, like, some sort of, like, record deal, and he rang me, and he was like, this really isn't working. Like, what's the point of signing another record deal when you're going through the same stuff of people trying to create you into something that you're not? So why don't we just do this independently for the first album, do music the way you want to do music, and just take every day, day by day? So we just wrote a load of music. And then, yeah, about 2 years ago, he was like, we've got an album here, like, without even knowing that we've got an album here. And I flew over to Minneapolis and we recorded it all. And yeah, it just kind of just pieced itself all together, really.
Well, let me ask, when you were talking about, you know, trying to confide in someone and then have this relationship where you can work with them, I just wonder if maybe it was easier. Was it easier for you to do that since there was this kind of distance thing involved? Because you're like, you set a time and then you're talking to this, you know, his face in a screen. Did that make it easier to reveal things because there's kind of this step in between, or would it have been?
I don't even think it was that. I think it was just, I've never met a person, like, I've never met someone with the same personality as Kevin. He is so forward and straight to the point. And before I'd wrote with him, I'd never, obviously, I'd done songwriting stuff before, but songwriters and producers kind of just took over and they did it for me. They didn't push me to my limits. So when I first got into the session with Kevin, I remember that first session where he turned around and he was like, okay, I'm going to go for a cuppa. I'm going to make myself some coffee. When I come back, I want the next verse wrote. And my heart literally sank. I was like, oh, wow, this guy wants me to actually write. Like, I'm actually doing this now. And he really shoves me in the deep end. He pushes me to my limits.
Well, that, oh, very cool. All right, so this guy is, like, in his 60s. Is that not a weird thing to be where your songwriting partner is, you know, quite 40 years older than you?
I feel like it kind of, I don't know. I think it makes the music unique. Like, he has so much experience and so much knowledge in music. And then, yeah, like, I'm kind of just living life as a 21-year-old with music, which is my inspirations are all the same as inspirations as him. But I also have, like, the younger generation of music that I'm hearing. And then also, like, living life as a 21-year-old and then bringing that all together. I think it creates something really special. Like, we see both points of view in writing.
This brings us to, you mentioned something that Kevin had said, hey, you know, we're doing all these different songs. You know, we've got like an album together. And I noticed that some of the earlier singles that you guys have done, they're not on the album. Like, Monsters is not on the album. There's some others. So what... So why weren't those songs part of the album?
They were kind of raw way before we kind of started. Obviously, I always have a place for, like, Monsters, That Girl Don't Live Here, Breakup, or, like, They're My Babies, they're my first music that I wrote. But I feel like I got to a point. So obviously, I had these songs, I released them. And I kind of just was at that point where I was like, I'm fed up of people telling me what to do. I want to release music. I've been benched and told not to do what I want to do for so long. I'm just going to put it out there because I can. I'm an independent artist. So I did that, and then we carried on writing. And then, I don't know, I just feel like something clicked. Like, we got to a point where I started writing music, and I was like, I've actually found me in the writing style that we're doing and the production style that we're doing. And it was just like, they didn't belong on the album. It was a different me. Like, that Monsters and That Girl Don't Live Here was kind of like 18-year-old me. And Little Miss Jagged is like me finding myself, like, a new chapter.
Well, let me ask you, one so related to that is, so you had this Jagged single that came out last fall. And it seems like that's incorporated in the album just sort of as an intro right at the beginning. But the song itself isn't on there.
No.
And why? Because there's a purpose for not having it there, isn't there? Why?
Yeah, I mean, Jagged was wrote before we even had the album title. It was wrote about just literally being uniquely yourself. Like, I've always said that I'm like Marmite. You either hate me or you love me. It's always been the same. I've always got so much hate on the internet for being me. And yeah, like I said, you love me or you hate me, and I'm not going to change. And Jagged was the perfect way to kind of explain that. And it kind of turned into a song. And yeah, I can remember sitting there having all of these songs in front of me and having Jagged sat there. And I didn't want Jagged on the album because I felt like, I don't know exactly what it was, but it just didn't feel like it was supposed to be on the album. But because it influenced the whole album, and Jagged, Rough Around the Edges, being Uniquely Yourself, which is the full album, like, every song doesn't fit into the same album. It's so, like, spread out in genres and lyrically what it's about. And I don't know, but I feel like it needed to have some kind of intro where it was describing what the album was before the listeners listened to the music itself. And it felt right for that to be that.
Okay, so the songs that are on the album, and you'll have to help me with the track listing here, because, you know, I see, like, I listened, like, through, like, YouTube, and I looked up the track listing off of Discogs to make sure that everything was there. But there's this track, the last track they have that's listed as 15 online through Discogs, says Move Over, but I never found that as a online.
Yeah.
Was that left off?
No, we have a track which is only on CDs and vinyls, which is a limited edition song. And for so long, I've wanted to do a Janis Joplin cover. She is one of my biggest idols in music, a big inspiration of why I'm doing music and who I am. And I thought it would be a little bit of a treat to people who follow my music, and also, just a little bit of a gift. So I put my own little spin on her track Move Over, and we had a blast doing it. It was crazy fun.
Well, I just feel like I'm just being teased, and I'm just, Well, I'll have to track down. So otherwise, if we include that, there's like 14 songs on the album. We got our coolest song in the world on there. Some of the others, you know, with the Spellbound singles on there, it's Electric and 16, Wild Things. Altogether, it was 14 tunes. So the balance of these songs, what's the time frame? Are they the last year, couple of years? When was the balance of the stuff written then?
It's so weird because I feel like when people normally write an album, they say, okay, I've wrote this album in like 1-2 years. But it's just not normal the way it came together. Like, the first song on the album that was wrote like at the earliest stage was 16. And I actually wrote it when I was 16 years old. And I was in a contract at the time. I was with a record label, and the record label I was with told me, it wasn't right to release. I shouldn't release it. It wasn't good enough. And yeah, it kind of just was took off me. I was told I wasn't allowed to release it. So when I did become independent and was thinking about doing an album, I said to Kevin, I wanted to go back on the track. And we did. And obviously it didn't relate to me at the time because I was no longer 16. I was 20. Like I said, yeah, the earliest song I was wrote when I was 16, and the newest song is 20. So it's like a proper 4-year period of my life that all of these songs have came into. And it's kind of just like a big diary entry of what I've been going through over the last however many years.
Oh, so did I hear that right? Like a diary entry.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's focus here on this, our coolest song then. All the Love Money Can Buy, off Little Miss Jagged. Now, this one to me, along with Dirty and You Only Love Me When I Lie, give me, you know, sort of an Amy Winehouse vibe. How does that sit with you?
I love that. I've always turned around and said I loved how Amy had music and she created it. She created her own style of music. She was truly her. She didn't fit into any category. And yeah, I love to be able to turn around and say, like, no one can do what I can do out there. Like, no one can perform like me on stage right now, and I own it. And yeah, I love that. I love that you're comparing it to Amy. That's crazy good. I love that.
Well, how did that particular song come together? Like, was it the lyric idea first? How did you and Kevin develop All the Love?
All the Love actually wasn't supposed to be on the album. We had our full album. We were going over to Minneapolis to record it. We had all our demos. And then at the end of the trip, we had 2 days left. And we were like, this is the first time that we've met. Why don't we write some music in the same room? Like, it makes sense. I'm here and I've got 2 days where we've finished recording the album. So we sat down, he sat down with his guitar. We started writing some stuff down and we came out with All the Love Money Can Buy. And yeah, we kind of just put it to the side, said this could be a good contender for a second album. But then he sent me it over when I got home. He sent me the demo and I was like, this belongs on Little Miss Jagger. It's got to be on, it's got to be on the album. Like, I don't care about the second album. This belongs on Little Miss Jagger. So yeah, we sat there, we sorted stuff out, we brought instruments, live instruments in to create a bigger sound. I recorded some more vocals down. And yeah, as soon as it was done, it wasn't even a decision if it should be a single or not. It was just obvious facts that it was one of the standout songs. And it meant so much to me. It was one of them songs that just needed to be wrote as well.
You know, I love the backing vocals on this tune and the backing vocals throughout. There's a lot of great interplay between you and the backing vocals. Sometimes it's call and response. So my liner notes say that they're sung by Patti Lacey. Is that right? And who is Patti Lacey?
She was a friend of Kevin's. I've actually not officially met her. I really wish I had, but she was recording the vocals on the tracks when I had my flight home. And we've had some conversations over Instagram. She seems like an amazing woman. And hopefully I get to meet her in the future. We said we're definitely going to do some stuff together on the second album as well, but her voice is insane.
Yeah, I agree. Very cool. Well, another fave track on there, Never Say Never. Cool kind of rocker, and I love the way that the lyric lands with never say never except to you. So tell me about that one. Where does that one come from?
I actually can't remember when we wrote this one, but I remember I was going through a stage of like loving Joan Jett, and I sent Kevin a message and I was like, I need to write a song that has this type of vibe. And he was like, cool, let's jump on FaceTime, let's write something. So I was like, okay, let's do it. And I remember coming out of the session and being like, what have we just wrote? I've never wrote anything like that. And just absolutely falling in love with the production and the way it planned out. And it's so much fun to perform live. Like, I feel like it's such a energetic, hyper, crowd-pleasing song. Like, performing it live is just so great. I love it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about another one, Timeless, quite timeless. Got this anthem quality to it, and I love the way it sort of builds up the dynamics of it. I love it a lot. So what does Timeless represent to you?
That actually song got created when I was 20. I was just listening to Teddy Swims for the first time. I think it was Lose Control. I can't remember. I remember hearing him on the radio and being like, this guy is bringing soul and blues back, and he's showing these, my generation, I was going to say youngsters, but I'm only 21 myself. these people my age, this music that I used to be out of place at school for listening to. I can remember listening to his voice and literally getting goosebumps up my arm and being like, yes, we're getting out of this category where it's not just pink pop music 24/7. Some proper vocals that make you actually feel something, yeah.
You know, I was reading some other interviews that you had done, and in one of those, they had mentioned Die and Stay Pretty, and you had responded about how meaningful that particular song was. And can you explain some of that, the background to Die and Stay Pretty?
I was so scared to release that song. Like, petrified, probably the most petrified I've been to release a song. Mainly because it was something that I'd never wrote about before. I don't even know what to say. I kind of watched someone get took over by like abuse of like drugs and alcohol, and that got put way before me, more than it should have been. And I'd never spoken to Kevin about that before. It was a part of my life that I kind of just put behind me, and didn't really want to open up about or talk about. But yeah, he finally got me to a vulnerable point where I was speaking about it. And he was like, the only way for you to actually let it out is to write about it. So we wrote about it. And yeah, it turned out amazing. I love performing it. I love listening to it. It's just, yeah, it's probably the most meaningful song on the album to me. And it's really scary to think about how personal it is. But the amount of people that have came up to me after gigs or messaged me on social medias and said how much the song has actually impacted them and how much it means to them, it's crazy.
How many songs didn't make the album?
Too many.
Well, this is just the first album, but in general, like, I think maybe we've already kind of touched on this, but like going forward, like you guys are getting together, you're working on a session, and then do you ever think like, oh, you know what, Kevin, remember the song we did like 2 years ago, whatever, let's go back to that. I think there's something. And when, if you do that, are you able to retool it or does it become more frustrating?
No, I mean, Timeless went through a load of different versions. I think I have like 4 different verses on my voice notes of different verses that it should have been. 16 got changed from my 16 songwriting perspective to my 20-year-old perspective, and lyrics and melodies got changed. So I feel like a song can always change. And it's not ready until it fully, fully feels ready. We wrote a song called Tick, Tick, Tick. And it was supposed to be on this album. And I was supposed to go and record it in Minneapolis. And it just didn't make it. Like, the song wasn't fully made yet. We had the base of the song, but it just wasn't right. So we ended up putting it to the side. And we said maybe come back to it on the second album. But yeah, sometimes it just happens like that. A song just doesn't come. Some songs come in like 10, 15 minutes, but some songs take a good year just to mold itself.
You know what Al Green told me one time? Well, this was at his church, so he was speaking to the congregation, but it was a personal relationship, you know. I'm being a little silly, but yeah, but he comes in and he was talking about the choir had started singing this song, and then he comes in and he's singing it with them. And the gospel number finished, and he said, you know, you can't microwave a song like that. That's the one you got to put in the oven and let it sit and brown a while, you know, meaning it's got to cook a while, you know.
Yeah, definitely true.
So what was I going to say? One last thing. I had this thought when you were talking about Tick, 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 that you had recorded that in Minneapolis, right?
Yeah, it was a song right. That we
Let me ask you about Minneapolis. So what time of the year were you there?
Oh, I don't know, but it was freezing. I was supposed to go, I think it was supposed to go in like February. But Kevin was like, no, don't call me. It's going to be snowing. And yeah, I'm not good with cold weather. I'm like a crier baby at anything. So I would have been whinging 24/7. But yeah, I think it went over in April. I got invited over to New York by Clive Davis to perform a Janis Joplin tribute. And then we kind of were like, well, I'm in America anyway. Why not just come straight to Minneapolis after? So Kevin came to New York with me. That was the first time we met. And then we flew to Minneapolis together for about 2.5 weeks.
Okay. And so it was in April, so there was only 3 feet of snow.
Either way, it was cold.
All right. I had read that you were playing some shows this year, like in the UK and Portugal. Do you have any tours upcoming?
We just got back from our little UK tour, like, last week or the week before. I don't even know what day it is anymore. But yeah, we did Manchester, London and Birmingham. Oh my God, it was absolutely amazing being back on stage. And about a couple of days ago, I've just been told that there's going to be some tour announcements getting announced very soon. So I'm on like cloud 9 right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, you got to get back here stateside. not just for Clive, but for everybody.
Trust me, we're working on it. It's all noted.
Okay, well, the other tune we're going to feature off the album right now is DNA, kind of rock and kind of funky dance number, getting down into the cellular level, bending it back up, biology rock. What do you think? Tell me about DNA.
DNA is just DNA. DNA is just one of them songs where it's full on, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just so upbeat and fun and funky. And I absolutely love James Brown. James Brown was one of them people that showed me you can move on stage. You don't have to stand like a tree on stage. And he really showed me that you can feel music on stage without being judged. That full song was inspired by him.
It's a dance song.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, getting it down in the cellular level. I was trying to think of, what's that thing called in the cells? The mitochondria. Isn't that it? Mitochondria, so that's like the energy center of the cell.
Yeah, it's got so much freaking energy.
Very, very, very cool. So DNA, right, this kind of dance number, how close is the final song to how you heard it originally in your head?
Way off. Every song's way off. I feel like I always imagine a song in my head of what it'll sound like, and then it turns out way different, but in a good way. Because I always imagine a song, but I imagine it as if, like, okay, so I want to write a song like this, and I'll show an influence of James Brown or Aretha Franklin, and that's the influence of the song. But the song gets made into my song, which makes it way different.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Courtney, it's been so great speaking with you again on our Coolest Conversations. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. All right. Here's DNA from Courtney Hadwin off her album Little Miss Jagged and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Was Courtney Hadwin singing about her DNA, and that track is from her debut album Little Miss Jagged. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Courtney for speaking with me on today's Coolest Conversations, and thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. That's your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage.
If I tell you it's my birthday, can I wrap you up and take you home?
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.